Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
All right, friends, if you've got your Bibles with you today, whether hard copy or digitally, let's go ahead and find John chapter 12. We're going to finish John chapter 12 up today. We look at verses 20 through 50. 20 through 50. Now, you may notice that your outline looks vastly different than it normally does, but I gave you enough space, hopefully, on the side for you to write some notes as you see fit. And I hope you do take notes, not just for because it's such an awesome sermon, because it does help you remember things. The more senses you can use, the more likely you are to remember. It exponentially increases your ability to remember things. So if you hear it, read it, and write it, you're using three of your senses at least, right? And so I hope you will take time to take some notes and all of that. But the reason today's outline looks like it does is because the two top things, and the two top items that are in the darkest boxes are really the two major themes of this last portion of chapter 12, of verses 20 through 50, and that they're so important that John weaves them in and out of the entire passage. And so we're going to work through the passage sort of like we do in a normal fashion, kind of work through down the verses, but we'll skip over some and we won't highlight as many as we normally would, simply because for lack of it, just saying, hey, Jesus is telling them he's about to die. Hey, Jesus is telling them he's about to die, which we would say over and over. We're just going to lay those two at the front and say this entire passage deals with Jesus' impending death. So Jesus will over and over and over again foreshadow his death, much like Mary did last week when she anointed his feet and washed them with her hair, just like Caiaphas did the week before, even though they didn't know it. Jesus is going to clearly know it and say, hey, my death is coming. And then the other thing that we'll see that Jesus, and we'll kind of highlight this more at the end, Jesus' death brings about judgment. Now, if you go back and you read this passage at home, when you get down into verse 48, 49, and 50, you're going to read that Jesus says, hey, I didn't come to judge the world. And you're like, but Pastor said that this whole passage is about judgment. Because it is. Because I'm going to try to differentiate something for you really quickly before we get into this. So Jesus did not come judging, and I'm going to use a little bit of a play on words here, okay, so listen to me carefully. Jesus did not come judging like, hey you, sinner, hey you, saint, hey you, sinner, and point out people. Now he does call them to repentance, right? He does tell, the guy in John 5, hey, go and sin no more that nothing worse may happen to you. Right? That's the guy who he healed, who was an invalid for 38 years at the pool of Bethesda. Right? And so Jesus clearly does call people to repentance and does call people to get away from sin. But he's not doing it in a judgmental, judging way in the way you and I would frame that word or that concept. But what Jesus does bring is there are judgments that are made. And his death and resurrection, his impending death and resurrection, listen to me, will force judgments to be made. Some of them are things that you and I are going to have to judge. That we're going to have to make a decision. Maybe that's a better way to phrase it. Jesus doesn't come judging or judgmental, but he does force decisions to be made. Does that make sense? And those two themes are going to be woven back and forth in this passage. All right, so let's begin reading in verse number 20. We're only going to read the first couple verses, then we'll skip down. We'll talk about them for a minute, and then we'll skip down to the first opening thing that I want to talk about this morning. All right, here we go. Now, there were certain Greeks. So these are not Jewish people. They are Gentiles. Among those that went up to the feast, to worship at the feast. So that's the Passover. So there's Greeks at the Passover. These therefore came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and asked him, saying, Sir, we would like to see Jesus. Right? We want to see Jesus. Philip came and told Andrew, and Andrew came and told and Philip. Andrew came and Philip, and they both told Jesus. All right, you hear, see what's going on? You see what's going on? Sorry, I put in the wrong verse. They're like King James. I'm sorry. Anyway. So if I have changed up some of the verbs, just flow with me this morning, all right? So here's the picture. Some Greeks came and they wanted to see Jesus. They had heard about Jesus. They wanted to see Jesus. And they find Philip, and then Philip finds Andrew, and Andrew and Philip go tell Jesus. Now this right here, this moment, for whatever reason, this is the moment in the turning point for Jesus. So we said we've been building up to Jesus' kind of transition away from the crowds and with a clear focus on the cross and spends time with his disciples. This is the moment. Because look at what Jesus says in verse 23. Jesus answered and said to them, "The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified." So from the beginning, what is hey? Listen, this is a long way back, okay? This was like earlier in January. Long time ago. John chapter 2. Y'all remember the story? It's not a test. Here's the story. Jesus at a party, at a wedding feast. His mom comes up to him and says, "Hey, they're out of wine." And Jesus says, "Woman, my time has not yet come." Right? Earlier, just several weeks ago, Jesus does this great miracle and the people want to make him king. And what does the text tell us? He slipped away, for his time had not yet come. But what do we do here today? From the very lips of Jesus, listen to me. "The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified." What does that mean? Jesus realizes his time is here. His time to be glorified. Now, what does that equal? That equals the cross. So Jesus is saying, "My time has come. It is time for the cross to come to the forefront of what's going on in my life and in the ministry." And so this visitation by the Greeks is the signal that Jesus' time has come. Now, in response, now remember I said that these ideas of death, his impending death, and judgment are going to weave back and forth. And the four things that are listed, kind of like the vertically, those are the four major things I want to look at this morning. Excuse me, five things that I want to look at this morning that show or illustrate in this passage those two ideas. And the first one comes right after this statement from Jesus in verse 24, because he tells us a little parable about some seed. And here's what it says. Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." That's the parable, okay? "Whoever," verse 25, "whoever loses his life, whoever loves his life loses it. And whoever hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. If anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there will be my servant also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him." All right? So now, what is Jesus telling us? All right. First, let's talk about the parable. Jesus gives us an agricultural parable like he's done in the past. The most famous one is the parable of the sower. But when you combine all of these, many times preachers put these kind of parables together in what we like to cliche call the law of the harvest. Right? The law of the harvest. In other words, you're not going to get a harvest unless you put a seed in the ground. And some seeds don't fall in the good ground. Some's going to fall over here. Some's going to fall over here. And you might have heard this too. Another part of that law of the harvest is you reap what you sow. Right? You sow bad seed, you don't reap nothing. You sow good seed, you have a good harvest from that good seed. And so Jesus adds another bit of layer of detail to that law of the harvest today when he says, "A seed, if it does not die, it remains alone. But if it dies, it will bear fruit." That's a sin. Now look, we all know that. If you garden, if you are a farmer, if you plant a plant or do anything, you know that seed that you put in the ground, if it remains a seed in the ground, you will not get a harvest from that seed. You won't. It won't. It won't happen. Trust me. I did it this year. I planted some Indian corn that Holly and I had planted several years ago, and I had got it off the cob and saved it. It's just been sitting on our china cabinet for 2 or 3 years. And so this was the year, and so I planted it in the ground and went back up there. And of course, I planted it right before drought, you know, and so it sat in the ground, I thought, is it bad? Is it whatever? Finally, some of it started to come up. And then I went through and I noticed there were these big gaps. And so I went back and looked, and guess what I found in the ground? Seeds. Just seeds, just laying there in the ground. But what did I find in those other places? I didn't find a seed. You know what I found? I found green leaves coming up out of the ground. And see, the whole process, if you've never planted a seed in your life, trust me, you should do it at least once. Because here's what happens. That seed, when you plant it in the ground, it has to die. It cannot stay a seed. For it to produce anything, it has to die to itself. The seed, it shoots down a taproot that goes down. And then after that root gets a little established, then the seed pops open. Literally, it splits in half. And out come these two little green leaves that are not real leaves. They're the first leaves. And they have this really weird name, and they're called cotyledons, right? And these cotyledons come out, and they gather sunlight and air and all of that. And the whole process you learned about in biology happens inside those cells of those leaves. And if they get enough sun and enough water and enough nutrients and enough time, you will get a harvest from that seed. But that seed has to die first. It cannot stay a seed. And so Jesus is equating that to, listen to me, to his life and to your life. Because Jesus is using this illustration to show what's about to happen in his life. That he is about to die. And unless he dies, the kingdom will not produce the fruit that it could, should, or would produce. But the seed must die. He must first die before the kingdom fruit can be produced. And in the same way, and we know this to be the case because Jesus drives this point home in verses 25 and verses 26. Because he transitions to you and me. Because he uses the conditional or whoever. And in verse 26, if anyone. And so he transitions to us in saying that if you want to bear fruit, and I want to bear fruit, and we as a church want to bear fruit in the kingdom, the law of the harvest necessitates that we must first die to self. Jesus very bluntly says this in Luke's gospel, I believe it's in chapter 9. He says we must deny ourselves daily. Take up our cross daily and follow me. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me daily. What's that mean? If you or I or we collectively are the center point of our lives, we will never produce fruit for the kingdom. We must first deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow after Jesus. And Jesus drives this point home even further in verse 26 when he says this. If anyone, look at this equation. If anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. So if you want a math equation for this, service equals following and leads to honor, because that's what Jesus is going to say in a minute. But Jesus says, if anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. And if anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. See, a lot of us, we want the honor. Listen to me. We want the honor, but we don't want the service, and we sure don't want the following. Because following sometimes means we got to go places we don't want to go and do things we don't want to do and deny ourselves in ways we don't want to deny ourselves because it's about who? Me. But Jesus says, if you serve me, you must follow me. And just in case we were unclear, Jesus says, following equals you are where I am. Then the Father will honor you. But you can't have it backwards. So Jesus says, let's just be real for a minute. Let's be real.
How do we get to serve and how do we get to follow? Denying ourselves. We've got to be the seed in the ground that dies. And look, that's a judgment you and I have to make. See, Jesus' death, what do we say? It brings about decisions that have to be made. And one of the decisions we learn right off the bat is you and I have to decide, is it really worth following Jesus? Is it really worth serving? Do we really care about the Father honoring us in the end? Because if you do, you got to back up and do what it takes to get there. That's a decision that you and I have to make. Then Jesus says, going along, Jesus in verses 27 and 28 tells us that He came for this purpose. What purpose? The purpose of being the seed that dies that produces much fruit. In other words, Jesus' purpose for coming is to die on the cross and rise again so that fruit for the kingdom might be produced. Lest we forget, He's done a lot of great signs and a lot of great miracles. But without the cross and the resurrection, those miracles are... Look, we're not even reading about them. You and I aren't here today. There's no hope. But Jesus came for this purpose. Then in verses 29, or last part of 28 and verse 29, a voice from heaven comes and speaks a message. And it appears that everybody hears the message because Jesus in verse 30 says the voice that heard is not for his sake but for yours. And then in verse 31 and 32, he says some of the most impactful statements in this entire chapter, or at least in this entire section. And so let's talk about them each at a time. Number 31, he says, "Now this is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out." Notice a couple things. In other words, some of your translations say the ruler of this world will be cast out. Verse 32, "And if I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all men to myself." Now let's talk about both of these. Because in both of these, we have these two factors, these two things running through. Jesus says in verse 31, "Now this is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out." The translation that's on the screen says the prince of this world. It's interesting that of all of the world words that Jesus could have chosen to use, what does he use? Does he use king of this world? He does not. What does he use? Prince or ruler. So what should that tell you right now about the enemy of God? He has never been king or never will be. At best, he is a prince or a ruler. And what does Jesus say here? He is being cast out. You know what that word cast out means? It's like you're throwing out the trash. You are throwing it away. You are throwing it out the door. And let me ask you a question. Whenever you throw the trash out the door, do you bring the trash back in the house? Negatory. It goes to the landfill. The other picture is jettisoning a boat. Jettisoning a boat. So when the boat's at the dock and when you're about to get on that cruise ship and go off to the Bahamas or something, what do they have to do? They have to jettison from the dock. That means they push the boat off. I'm like, see y'all later. Hope there's no hurricane out there. Right? That's the picture Jesus is using. That the ruler of this world, the temporary ruler of this world, through his death, a judgment is being wrought on the ruler of this world. And it is that his power is no more. He's being thrown out like the trash at the end of the day. Never to have control and never to have the authority ever again. Now, the question might be, well, how does that work for us? Hold on, Matt. We're going to hit that one at the end, okay? But Jesus goes on. He says, not only is the rule of the world cast out, but he said, listen to it very carefully, okay? Listen to the pronouns. When I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. Do you hear the words? What was the main word? I. Not me, not you. Not when you are lifted up. Not when people are lifted up. Not when programs are lifted up. Not when political leaders are lifted up. But who? When I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. That's what Jesus says. In other words, when Jesus is lifted up, meaning when he is on the cross,
It is through that event that He will draw people to Himself. Not draw people to you. Listen to me. Listen to me. Not necessarily even draw people into a particular church or a particular movement. But He will draw people to Himself. Right. Jesus says He should be the center of everything. Because it is only through Him, by Him, and for Him that people are drawn to Him. And then the last thing Jesus says in the very kind of tail end of the chapter. Now John's going to give you this. We're not going to read it all, but in verses, kind of verses 36, the last part of verse 36 all the way through 43, John's going to give you this entire section on unbelief. Right? But what he's doing is he's cataloging what unbelief and belief in Jesus, how they're opposite of one another. And so I encourage you to go back. But the kind of tail end, the last several sections, teaching sections of Jesus, verses 35 through 36, and then all the way from 44 through 50, have this one idea in common. Believe in me. And so Jesus is like, hey, I've come to die like the seed. See, watch how they do it. I've come to die like the seed must die to the fruit. I have come to die. And just in case you missed it, that was the purpose for which I came. And because I came for this purpose to die, and it will eventually rise again, guess what that means? The ruler of this world is powerless. And then I will draw all people to me, and you must believe in me. And so Jesus stacks these ideas, one like after the other, to put those listening, and listen to me, and you here today, at the point of decision, and that a judgment must be made. Are you going to believe in Jesus or are you not? Now, I know that sounds like we're beating the horse in the ground because we've said that for a number of weeks. But here it is. This is what the text points us to is, are we going to believe in Jesus or not? And that's a judgment that the cross forces us to make on a daily basis. Right? Because you might believe in Jesus today, but tomorrow, we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, do we? It might be good, bad, or ugly. But are we going to believe Jesus in tomorrow's good, bad, or ugly? We got to make that decision when your feet hit the floor. Or for some of you, you might stay up like Pastor Adam and Jason did and these kids. You might not be 1 o'clock this morning, right? Bless y'all, by the way.
Labor of love.
Right. Absolutely. That's the point that Jesus is bringing to us today, is that He's going to die. That brings judgments that must be made in the world. He came for this purpose. The ruler of the world is cast out. He will draw all people to Himself, for Himself, and He's giving you and I the opportunity to believe in Him. So the question before us is, what are we going to do with that? Right? And I can't make that decision for you. You have to make that decision. Each and every one of us has to make the decision. Are we going to believe in Jesus or are we not? And so that's kind of John, that's kind of the message that John builds through the words and actions of Jesus in verses 20 through 50. Now you may say, well, how does this apply to us? Now, the clear one is the one we just ended on. But I want to talk about two more. But in case you missed it, Jesus is on the back side of your outline. On the back side, there's two sides. On the back side of your outline, it says that Jesus' death and resurrection brings judgment, just so we're clear, on sin, death, hell, and the grave, clearly, right? He conquers sin on the cross, destroys the final vestiges of the effects of sin by raising from the dead, which is death and the grave. The ruler of this world is judged, is inadequate and insufficient to have authority. He judges unbelief in the sense that if you don't believe in Jesus, judgment is already out there on you. And it forces us to make decisions about Jesus. Now, that's obviously the main focus of this passage, but I do want to draw your attention to the two verses 31 and 32, because each of those necessitate, those are kind of the high water marks, in my opinion, for this passage, and they necessitate a little bit of attention on how these two things apply to us, okay? Listen to me very carefully. We got about 12 minutes left, okay? Listen to me. The first one, the ruler of this world. I love that Jesus puts this passage, says this, and John records this. because it absolutely reminds us that the enemy, whatever you want to call him or in them, Satan, the devil, the evil one, the Bible calls him a bunch of other names, the deceiver, father of lies, whatever you want to call him, listen, and you got to get this, listen to me, they are a defeated enemy. On the cross, what they thought was their greatest victory turns into their greatest defeat. When Jesus says the prince of this world, the ruler of this world is cast out, he is meaning that Satan no longer has authority in any way over, especially over God's people. So practically, what does that mean for you and me? It means, listen to me, the only power and authority that the Satan, the enemy of God's people, has in your life and in my life and in our church is that which we allow him to have. Seriously? You say, well, Paul talks about all this armor of God. We're going to get there in a second. Just hold on. But look at me. The only rule that the enemy has in your life is that which you allow them to have. Listen to me. My seminary professor said it this way, and I've never forgot that, and it makes perfect sense. He says, post the cross, post Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. So today, he said, Satan is nothing more than a dog on a leash. And let me ask you a question. How do you get bit by a dog on a leash? You get inside the circle of the leash. Long as you stay outside the circle, guess what happens? You don't get bit. And let me put it to you this way. Listen, I thought about this way. Listen to me. How do you, if the dog's on the leash, how do you stop getting bit by the dog? There's two ways. I done told you one. Don't even get near. But see, some of us, we live inside the circle. And guess what happens when you live with a dog inside the circle of the leash? You eventually don't get bit no more because the dog owns you. Right? You just snuggle up with a dog, you don't get bit. You start feeding the dog, you don't get bit. You start wallowing in the path of dirt that the dog has made around the center point of the leash. Guess what happens? You don't get bit because you're living in it. So look at it. There's two ways we can look at this. If we're not getting bit by the dog anymore, we need to ask questions. We need to say, is it because I'm living too close to the enemy, or is it because I'm so far and I'm so far away and I'm running away from it that I'm living so closely to the Lord? Because the only power that Satan has in your life is when you let him in. Now you say, wait a minute, Pastor, wait a minute, Paul talks about this whole armor of God and this fiery darts and absolutely Satan can tempt you, right? Because the dog on the leash is just an illustration, okay? So just, you know, he's not like up in, you know, somewhere in the mountains, you know. That's just an illustration. So yes, Satan can absolutely tempt you. Absolutely. That's why Paul talks about this armor. But if you've got all your armor on because you're so closely following Jesus and you're not trying to see how close I can get to the line of sin before I step over, and you've got your shield of faith which extinguishes the fiery darts of the evil one, then you don't have anything to worry about. Because it's only when you start teetering on the line, how close can I get? How close can I get? That's when you get bit. So listen to me, friends. Look, you ain't got to learn no special spells. You ain't got to light no candles and flick no oil to get the devil away. Just be like Jesus. Because wherever there is light, darkness cannot stand. And as long as we are in the light of Christ and he is projecting his light through us into the world, guess what? The devil must run. You may be tempted and you may be tried, but as long as you are living for Christ, as long as you are serving, which equals living, which equals the Father honoring you, you are with Jesus, where Jesus is in your life, then guess what? You are
going to be. Okay, I'm not saying that's not going to be hard times are going to come. I'm not saying that everything's going to be smooth sailing, but you will be able to make it through. Here's the second thing Jesus says. If I am lifted up, then I will draw all people to who? To myself. Listen to me, friends. If the center point of your life, if the center point of our church ever becomes anything other than Jesus, we are way off the mark. And look at me. Just as Jesus says, when I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. I think this is a teaching lesson for the way we model ministry and the way we model our personal lives. Because look at me. If we lift up as a church a program or an idea or whatever, we're missing the mark. Because programs, you know, listen to me. Some of y'all that are our age or a little bit older, you know this. You know what we used to use in Sunday school? Flannel boards. Then they went to 3M sticky boards. And now everything's digital. So if we hang on to, we've got to use the flannel boards. Then we're elevating. I know it's silly, but we do that with other stuff, don't we? We elevate flannel boards to the center of our ministry and focus. Then is Jesus being lifted up? Negatory. Is Jesus able to draw all people to himself through our ministry? Not a chance. And so Jesus must be the center point of us personally and us corporately. Right? This point was drawn home to me this week. Well, actually 2 weeks ago, but even more so this week. I was on Facebook watching, you know, Facebook has a little watch thing. You can like watch videos on Facebook. This thing popped up. I've never seen this. Person, his show, or whatever, and it popped up on my Facebook thing. And I was like, and it started playing. You know, sometimes if you just scroll through, it'll automatically start playing. Well, video like started playing, and the first little sound, they did a good job editing the sound bite because it caught my attention. I was like, And so I listened to it. And it was part of a sermon this guy is about. Preacher in Atlanta, not in Cal, in Atlanta. And I listened to this little segment. I was like, oh, that's bad. Like, he should not be doing that. And then I thought, but wait, I'm a pastor. I'm sure if somebody creatively edited some portion of my sermon, it made me sound like a heretic too. So I was like, give him the benefit of the doubt. I'll go YouTube the entire sermon. And it was worse than I thought. Right? So, for one, here's the thing. And here's the clip that caught my attention. Right? And I try not to do this unless the text kind of leans into... I try to stay away from the whole politics and all of that, like preaching politics, unless the text just drives home the point and all that. And I mentioned some things here or there, but it's never the main point of the message and necessarily and all of that. But this guy did this whole spill for like 3 to 4 minutes on one particular senatorial candidate in the state of Georgia, completely bashing one and taking up for the other. I mean, overwhelmingly partisan. And I know it was intentional because the title of the sermon had in it one of the candidates' last names. And I'm like, you put that in there on purpose, which listen to me, and here's what made it bad, had nothing to do with the text that he preached. Zero. Nothing. It was completely an addition to the text, addition to the sermon, had nothing to do with the text. And in fact, the illustration that he began with, which led into this thing, had nothing to do with the text he preached on. And then what made it worse is he didn't exegete the text. He just was trying to make a point. And then at the end of the sermon, and it was recent, I know it was recent, because he was talking about this note like that happened this week, senatorial race. And then he had the audacity to promise his congregation something that he cannot promise because it's not in the scriptures. You say, what is the problem? He said, this November, God's going to
God's going to reveal somebody, your name to somebody. Some of you need a job in here. He's going to reveal your name to somebody. And I'm like, this is the big one here. And to make, listen to, and again, I'm not, he was kind of very emotive, like captured your attention, which is cool. Like there should be some ebb and flow in the sermon, or else it's monotone, or either too high or too low. And it's, you know, I'm cool with that. But everybody in the crowd, I mean, one lady had a pom-pom, like from a football game going. And I'm like, no. If you want to bring your pom-pom, that's fine. That's not my problem. But it's like, you're pom-pomming things that he can't, because the Bible, what? Like, you're giving people hope and promises that God doesn't give them hope to promise. Thank you, Jason. And I'm like, what? And then, I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done this. But then I looked at the comments.
Beware.
And that was even more disheartening. And here's why. Thankfully, on the Facebook version of the video, some people had the audacity to say, that's not preaching, he didn't preach the Bible. But on YouTube, not nary one. Man, and here's the saddening part. Not only were people saying, man, that's great preaching, but some people, this one person, he said, I'm not even a believer, I'm an atheist. But man, I could go to a church where that preaching happens. And I was like, man, that's bad. So what you say, well, Pastor, how did you get all this? I am lifted up. It's Jesus. And I mean, not Travis. When Jesus is lifted up, Jesus will draw all people to himself. And that absolutely, here's the heart and disheartening of that. I absolutely did not have, Jesus was not lifted up. The point of the passage was not the point of the sermon. It was something else. And then you insert this highly charged political theater ad, which everybody shakes their pom-pom in agreement with. You know? And then people in the comments are assuming, hey, this is what and it's like, no, because Christ wasn't lifted up. Nobody was drawn to Christ. They were drawn to a good time and a good feeling, and they left and energized, but for what purpose? And my friends, look at me. If Jesus is not the center point of our life, we're just a theater act on Atwater Road. And then we should not wonder why people don't come to Christ in our midst. And why people don't experience the Lord and don't what is our purpose, our win statement? Moving ourselves and others toward Christ. If Jesus is not the center, we will never see that happen. And we should not be surprised if we're going to be some theater act on that water road. And that means Jesus has to be the center of your life. He has to be the center of my life. And then he can be the center of our lives collectively here at Atwater Road. But the only way you make an impact for the kingdom, and the only way I make an impact for the kingdom, is if Jesus is at the center. If we are lifting him up, because if only when he is lifted up, that he will draw all people to himself. Not me, not me, not the Valley Road, but to himself. Right? And so that's where the rubber meets the road today. So this week, are you going to believe in Jesus enough to make him the center of your life? And are you going to believe in him enough that the enemy's really defeated? And not go near the dog on the leash. You got to make that choice. You have to make that judgment. You have to make that decision just like I do.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.